Chapter 6. Emily. Emily was having trouble focusing. It was the hour of prayer in the vaunted hall of the highest, and she needed to keep her mind on the essence of the divine powers. But she couldn't help but worry about Charlie. She was going to be down there, trying to rule. In the state she was now, how could the elder angels expect that of her? She needed to grieve, needed to take time to process all that had happened. The pain she was going through, the suffering, it wasn't something that they could expect her to just shove down and ignore. Emily wanted to help somehow, but there was nothing she could do. She silently prayed, over and over, for some way to help the princess. The hour passed slowly, and she couldn't help but fidget the entire time. Later, walking through the hall with Sarah to another of her lessons, she could feel the tension between her and her mentor at the gravity of what had happened recently. She would look up, and Sarah's face was straight ahead, but the tension was still there. The force of Emily's outrage against the Elder Seraphim's resignation put a pressure of resentment between the two. Eventually, she couldn't take it anymore, and she finally spoke up.
"Why, Sarah? Why did this have to happen?"
Sarah's face didn't turn, but her expression became pained before she drew in a breath and spoke, carefully choosing every word.
"You are upset by the fate of the Morning Star girl. You do not agree with Heaven in this matter. I know that, Emily. I understand what it is like to care for someone and see them be hurt. More than you can know."
Emily didn't reply, and so she continued.
"You think we shouldn't put pressure on her? We shouldn't expect her to do this? We should find someone else, bring Adam to justice, make right this wrong?"
"Yes,"
Emily finally replied, throwing her hands up in exasperation.
"Adam did such terrible things. He killed so many innocent people. And we're just supposed to let it go? Why? I know Lucifer wronged him horribly, but Adam going on some insane slaughter doesn't make it better. We should at least support Charlie until she can stand on her own."
"It is not our place to stand in the way of these actions. It was ordained by divine right that the exterminations were to be done, and that Adam was to do them as he saw fit. I received that knowledge myself. It was necessary."
"Ordained? What are you talking about?"
Sarah's smile was piteous, and she placed a hand on Emily's shoulder.
"You were not yet formed to see what it was like in the early ages of mankind, Emily. Before the exterminations, hell was overflowing. There were countless billions down there, so many it was unsustainable. Besides some of the mortal souls looking for ways to threaten heaven, the overpopulation, it made everything so much worse. As bad as it is now, it had been far more terrible in those times. Imagine, if you can, constant warfare across the Ring of Pride. The amount of sinners, it was incomprehensible. Every sinner who had ever lived and died, fighting in petty feuds for land and power, killing millions of souls over the course of this time. Some of the most powerful sinners even began to whisper about rising against heaven in another war. The seraphim, archangels, powers, cherubim, all of heaven came together in prayer to find a solution. On the seventh day of prayer, Adam claimed he had a revelation. He came before an assembled council of seraphim and the highest archangels and said that there should be extermination. Hell's population needed to be culled, and it seemed that Adam had figured a true solution."
Emily was silent, taking in all that she was told. As they came to the chamber door where they were going to take their study, Sarah paused and continued.
"The seraphim created the exorcists to serve as this purging force of angelic warriors under Adam, and Michael taught the first man in his new army the finer points of angelic combat. Uriel consulted the Tome of Creation and first crafted angelic steel, which could be used to permanently kill sinner souls. They were given this sacred task to go down to hell and strike down the worst of the sinners to foster peace. They were to slay the unclean in whatever numbers were necessary until the population was under control. Then, Lucifer signed a treaty which compelled himself and the other powers in hell to stand aside and let them perform this purge again, every year, as necessary. In exchange, the Hellborn were exempt from the slaughter, along with the most powerful sinners, the Overlords. This plan was carried out successfully, but something went wrong.
What do you mean?
Emily said as they entered the room. It was beautiful and opulent, like all the rooms in the Hall of the Highest. Blue walls that glowed softly with lines of light, high golden chairs and a golden table with a crystal tabletop set into it. A large window built into the far wall overlooked the promenade from a staggering height, giving a flawless view of the great and beautiful City of Heaven. They sat across from each other, and Sarah waited a long time before she took in a shaky breath and spoke.
During that first extermination, he...
She trailed off and seemed to lose herself in memory. There were tears in Sarah's eyes, and Emily watched in awe and sympathy as her mentor wiped them away and let the pain of past ages wash over her. Taking a deep breath, she spoke more clearly and steadily, collecting herself.
I watched Adam grow, Emily. I was there the day he was sent into the garden. I watched him play. I watched him learn. I watched him be happy. First with Lilith, and then, after she betrayed him, I watched him with Eve.
Emily knew this story. Creation was one of the first stories you were taught in heaven, as an angel. She'd always wondered how the innocent, dutiful, and gentle Adam described in the Genesis of the world had become what she knew now as the cold and cruel first man. She would have tried to find out more from people who had known Adam back then, but she was forbidden from speaking to Lilith. And Eve wasn't in heaven.
He wouldn't truly talk about what happened when he went down for that first extermination, but something in his eyes, the pain I saw there, it broke me, Emily. It truly, truly broke me. He was never the same after that. He got colder, more distant and hedonistic, spent more and more time with his exorcists. Under his leadership, they went from stoic crusaders to bloodthirsty psychopaths. But he is still Adam. He is still an angel. And all I can do is pray that he will find his way again.
But Sarah, why can't we at least take Adam to task?
Emily pressed.
After what he did, we can't just let it go. I mean, what about...
No, Emily. We're not going to punish him.
What?
Listen to me. I know you are young. I know you have compassion for the Morningstar girl and that your heart bleeds for her. But heaven is in a precarious enough position as it is. We cannot start turning on each other. Not now. Besides, per an agreement made with the new queen, there won't be another extermination for 5 years anyhow.
Really?
She asked, feeling excited for Charlie. Emily was shocked to hear that Charlie had managed that. It wasn't justice, not really, but it was something. If she had free rein to build for 5 years, maybe she'd be okay. Especially since Emily knew she would do everything in her power to help the new queen. As long as nothing else went too terribly wrong, eventually, this could actually turn out well. Charlie was just the kind of person needed to build a better hell. She was about to ask for more details when there was a sound, distant and soft, like the resonant collective note of the angelic choir she sung in on Sundays. Odd. You usually only heard that sound when a soul ascended to heaven. It was accompanied by a glowing golden shaft of light on the far side of the room. From this light floated up a rather odd-looking fellow. He looked like a snake and a person combined, with a long bluish-white tail, gold and white striped sport coat, a large brooch in the shape of an eye was set right under his neck in the center of the collarbone, and he wore a black bow tie with a red heart woven into its center. On his hairless, bluish-gray-skinned, bald head, he wore a large white and gold top hat, with golden, heart-shaped goggles resting on the brim, and a large, seemingly alive, white eye in the center of the top. Instead of hair, he had a frilly cobra's hood that hung down from the crown of his head, with little red markings around the edge which looked like eyes. Most striking was the simple yet beautiful golden halo that floated gently above his head. Emily recognized him. This was one of the sinners who had been with that angel dust fellow during the night they witnessed at the trial. He was an angel. He was an angel! He was redeemed! Sarah's eyes widened, and she stared in complete astonishment as Emily made a happy little squeak and covered her hands with her mouth.
Where am I?
He said in an odd, lispy sort of accent. Turning around and seeing the two seraphim in front of him, he smiled nervously and raised a single hand in greeting.
Hello,
he said, looking to each of them.
Is this, what I think it is?
Sarah didn't say anything. She opened her mouth, closed it, opened it again, struggling to make her voice work. But it's like her mind was misfiring, trying to grasp a reality that was completely inconceivable.
It's not possible,
she muttered, so soft that Emily barely heard her. The junior seraph, however, felt no such confusion. The joyful, loving, youthful angel shone with a bright, happy light, her exultation spilling out of her like a blessing she had not room enough to receive. With a gleeful cry, she flew across the room and hugged the apparently redeemed sinner, who made a startled kind of yelp and fell backward as she hugged him to the ground, giggling all the while.
Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, she was right! She was right, she was right, she was right!
Can you get off me, please?
The serpent said after a moment, squirming a bit and blushing as he was pressed up against him in a rather compromising angle.
Emily!
Sarah's scolding tone told the overexcited seraph that she wasn't behaving in the measured and stoic way expected of their angelic order.
Oh!
She gave a short, nervous laugh and helped the snake man to his feet. Or tail.
I'm sorry. I'm so glad to see you and know Charlie was right. Oh, but how rude of me. I haven't introduced myself. My name is Emily, and, welcome to heaven,
she said.
Well, after that I certainly feel welcome.
He laughed a little awkwardly. Then he seemed to realize, all at once, that he'd forgotten his courtesies as well.
Ah, and, my name is Serpentius. It's lovely to meet you, Emily, and you,
Pentius trailed off as Sarah came forward and collected herself, looking down at Emily and scolding her with a simple widening of her eyes in warning. The young angel shrank back, and the head of the seraphim regarded the odd, snake-like figure with caution.
I am Sarah, High Mistress of the Seraphim. Forgive my rudeness just then. This has never happened before, she said simply, blinking a few times as if Serpentius was liable to drop back out of existence at any moment.
So, am I redeemed? May I, enter heaven?
Asked Pentius hopefully, looking up at the large and terrifying angelic figure with a nervous sort of excitement. We'll need to speak to Azrael, Sarah said. He knows the fate of every mortal soul, and must have weighed yours upon your initial death, as he does for all mortals. Follow me.
They left the study room and made their way down a hall and deep into the Hall of the Highest. Pentius walked between Sarah and Emily, and because he looked like he belonged, nobody batted an eye. Though some took note of the extremely powerful Seraph or her young and lovely pupil, Pentius might as well not have been there. Emily figured that this was all well and good. She didn't want the poor guy mobbed with questions and unwanted attention just as he was coming to terms with his shift on the immortal plane. Judging by the perpetually awed expression on his face, the awkward snake man was having a hard time really believing he was here. In heaven. Finally, they turned down a darker hallway, painted in grays that slowly toned down to a dark black, as the hall ended in a door. The door was a deep, inky black, featureless save for a single silver door handle and a name etched into the door in pale gold letters. It simply read, Azrael. Sarah took a deep breath, and Emily shuddered. It was cold in the hallway, but of course, around Azrael, it was always cold. The Elder Seraph twisted the knob, and the stale smell of a crypt hit the trio, like old, dusty stone and cobwebs, and a hint of earthy sort of odor that Emily couldn't place. As they stepped into the room, the young Seraph's eyes widened slightly, and Pentius whimpered as they took the chambers of the Archangel of Death in. The floor was white marble, the design of a skull with a cross stamped into the center of its forehead done upon the ground in brilliant detail. The walls were as black as the door had been, and were decorated sparsely. A painting of the classical Grim Reaper was against the wall next to the door, and a single large bookcase stood against the far wall, lined with hundreds of tomes simply labeled by alphabetical order, like an encyclopedia. Above the books was a simple plaque which read, Qui mortui sunt. Emily shuddered to look upon it. Those who had died, it read. Even looking at it made her feel sad. There was a large, circular chandelier hanging above the center of the room, wrought of cold, black iron. Each of the candle holders set into its diameter was a skull with a hollowed-out cranial cavity to act as a catch for the wax, which was melted down the sides of the candle holders like stalactites in some ancient cave. In the center of the room, there was a large, black desk. The glossy, finished desktop had a large book on it, open to show hundreds of names in very small print upon the pages, and the quill next to it was as black as the ink it rested in. Seated at this desk was a quietly terrifying figure. Azrael, Archangel of Death, the guide of souls and reaper of the heavens, had barely raised his head to look upon his guests. His face was indiscernible. The Archangel of Death was clothed in a large gray robe with smoky purple patterns woven into the thin, impossibly old-looking fabric. His face obscured by the garment's hood. Some kind of angelic magic was there, and past that veil of his hood there was complete blackness. Emily couldn't even see his lips. It was as if nothing was under the garment at all. The only hints to his appearance were bony arms covered in parchment-thin gray skin, which looked more dead than alive. Those arms raised, hands joining to steeple their fingers as he regarded them coolly. His halo was a soft-glowing indigo, and above it, where an exorcist would have a little black spike, he had a skull, that motif of death that Emily had become accustomed to seeing in this room. His wings were gray, and the feathers pockmarked and torn, eternally weathered. They were a light gray towards the top of the wing, where the bones were, and then as the feathers descended, they faded darker until they became black near the tips.
Zara, to what do I owe this most rare of visits?
He inquired, in a dry, papery rasp, barely more than a whisper. If the room hadn't been so silent, Emily might not have heard the words, and the creepy, flat, dead way his voice sounded made her wish she hadn't.
Azrael, she responded, collecting herself. I am in need of your service, if you would be so kind,
she said, bowing respectfully to him. Emily didn't know much about Azrael. She'd only seen him a handful of times, and when she did, nobody ever seemed to speak to him. He was the Archangel of Death, an immensely important, yet seldom loved figure, due to his grim work. He was honored, to be sure, and shown every respect that ones such as Gabriel, Raphael, Michael, or Uriel were shown, but very seldom did anyone come to speak with him, or ask him to weigh in on anything. That's what made Emily nervous. Why would Zara need to talk to him? Then she got her answer.
This individual.
She pushed the cringing Pentius forward so the Archangel could get a better look at him.
Has seemingly been redeemed from hell. Once a denizen of Pentagram City, this sinner looks to have been absolved of sin somehow, and now he's been allowed into heaven. I just need to know if this means that... if this means that Charlie Morningstar was right.
Emily had never heard Zara sound so uncertain before. She was so genuinely lost on what to do that it made Emily uncertain too. He looked to be redeemed. He was here, in heaven. But could it really be true? Was it really possible? The hooded angel stood, revealing how terrifyingly tall and spindly he was, only a head shorter than Michael. He towered over all else in the room, the Reaper's scythe materialized in his hand as he stepped forward, raising it high.
Well, then, let us see.
He hissed, and drew upon the power necessary to judge a soul. Pentius turned to flee, and two small, purple flames lit in Azrael's hood, where eyes should be. Reaching out a hand, it was as if he gripped the snake with simply his will, forcing him to freeze in place.
Ah, yes, Sir Pentius,
he whispered dreamily.
I remember this soul.
Emily didn't think there was any point in asking how he'd known the sinner's name. He probably knew the name of every mortal. At least, all who had died.
I don't remember you,
Pentius said, squirming helplessly in the mighty angel's ethereal grip.
Nobody ever does,
Azrael said as his fingers sparked, then spewed dark flames. A purple fire surrounded the snake man and covered him with such speed that he screamed before realizing that it apparently didn't hurt. Emily looked on in shock and concern as the indigo flames burned brighter and brighter as the Reaper's hand shook and the flame in his eyes intensified. Finally, the fire went out all at once, leaving the shuddering Serpentius bewildered but unharmed. With a heavy sigh, Azrael lowered his hand and slumped for a moment, the flames leaving his eyes and returning the hood to pure blackness, before he collected himself and stood up straight to regard Zara.
No, he is not redeemed. This soul, Serpentius, his sins were absolved. Though not due to redemption or any action he took on his own. When Adam struck this one down, it was with pure, holy energy, the very essence of our divine masters. Their power turned his hellish corporeal form to dust. Yet they saw in his soul a purpose and potential. What this purpose is, I cannot discern, yet this is why he is here.
Turning on Serpentius, he lowered his scythe and gave him a bow, lowering himself to the serpentine saint's height for but a moment, in a signal of genuine respect.
Serpentius, I welcome you to heaven. May whatever duty you have here be done easily and with honor. Now,
he addressed all of them this time.
Please leave. I have souls to guide, and the dead wait for no man, be he mortal or not.
With that, they left the somber, quietly unnerving figure of Azrael behind, and returned to the halls of the highest. Emily laughed and hugged Serpentius again as he sighed, a wave of relief washing over him.
I belong here. I really, really belong here.
Yes, Sarah said with a warm smile. Go down this hall, and Emily here will help you to settle into your new life here. She will take you on a tour of heaven and show you all its sights.
He eagerly nodded.
Thank you, ma'am. Oh, thank you!
He said, taking off his hat and bowing deeply before slithering down the hall, excited to experience the glory of heaven for the first time. Emily moved to follow, but a hand on the back of her collar yanked her back as Sarah stared down at her, now deadly serious. Her expression made the junior seraph shrink back reflexively, as if expecting punishment.
Emily, listen to me very carefully, she whispered. You are not to tell anyone, nor this Serpentius is allowed to tell anyone, that he is from hell. If anyone asks, he is a newly sanctified mortal soul from earth. He's like any other saint in heaven. Do I make myself clear?
But why?
Emily started, but Sarah's harsh words cut her short.
Why? Why? Do I really need to explain it, Emily? Adam just went down and slaughtered thousands upon thousands of his kind, him included. Do you know how it would look if he was known as what he is? Even if Azrael were to tell everyone himself that he was only brought here for a special purpose, they would still whisper. It would cause... I won't even give voice to what it could cause. Do not let his true identity become known. And for the sake of heaven itself, do not let Adam know who he is. If he knew, I don't know what he'd do, but whatever it is, it would be loud, probably public, definitely violent. For me, Emily, please keep it secret.
She wasn't happy about it. But Emily couldn't argue that she was right. The important thing was that Pentius was here. At least one good soul had been saved. It didn't matter who knew. Good had still happened. The divine had still shown favor on him, and even if he wasn't technically redeemed, he was still here, and there was still hope. She nodded, and Sarah sighed with relief.
Thank you.
Then she gave Emily a gentle nudge and a small, motherly smile.
Now go. Show this new soul around heaven and have fun. We'll continue your lessons tomorrow.
Emily hugged Sarah, and Sarah hugged her back, petting the young angel's impossibly soft white hair. Then the young seraph pulled away and flew to meet Pentius, who had been waiting politely at the end of the hall. He offered her his arm and tipped his hat in a dorky yet gentlemanly way that made her giggle.
So, m'lady, would you care to take my hand?
She nodded and put her arm through his, walking with him out onto the street of gold and into the bright light of heaven's afternoon glow. It was a beautiful day, made more beautiful by the fact that she had a new friend to share it with. In heaven, every day really was a perfect day. She was walking with him towards the center of the promenade.
First, she would show him the ice cream shops, and then the Zoo of Eden, and then... And then the...
Emily?
Pentheus said softly, and she looked up at him to see a nervous smile on his face.
I just have to know. What happened on Extermination Day? Was I the only one who died? I was the only one, right?
Emily felt all the joy and light in this moment leave her heart, as she struggled to give voice to the horrible truth. Here he was so happy, and now she had to take it away. She stammered, trying to find the right way to say it, some way to lessen the blow, but her expression must have told what her words couldn't. Pentheus looked scared, eyes widening.
Did anyone survive? Charlie? Veggie? Angel Dust? Husk? Cherry? Please tell me Cherry Bomb made it!
Emily bit her lip to hold back the tears, and all she could do was shake her head. Serpentius's face twisted in an agony so intense, it was as if Azrael's scythe had cleaved him open after all. Tears welled in his eyes.
Did anyone else come up to heaven? Anyone else with me?
Emily hugged him and pressed against his chest, her warm, angelic tears of sympathetic loss hot and wet against his breast. She shook her head again.
No, it was just you.
And so, in the center of the Street of Gold, with happy angels and saints going to and fro all around, the souls frolicking and cavorting amongst each other, all without a care in the world, the snake and the seraph stood there in each other's arms and wept for the loss of those whom he had loved so, so much.